Hello and welcome to Plus One. I'm Rich Bowen. Plus One is the voice of the Apache Software Foundation. We talk with projects about what they're up to and what they're trying to accomplish. Today I have Tim Saucer, who is on the PMC of the Data Fusion Project. Thank you so much for making time for this.
Yeah, thank you for the invitation. Appreciate it.
Yesterday, I spoke with Andrew Lamb, and we did kind of the high-level view of what Data Fusion is, and today we're going to dig into a few other things about the project. Tim's the primary maintainer of the Python side of the project. The project is primarily Rust, but also has bindings in a number of other languages. Tell us about the Python side of things.
Yeah, I'd be happy to. The way I came at Data Fusion was I was working in a Spark workflow at work, and my background is primarily in robotics. And we were doing some operations in Spark. We had some processes that were taking orders of magnitude longer than I expected them to take, based on like my knowledge of like how of what's being done, what computations are happening, and it seemed very wrong. So I started searching for other approaches that I could use. And being a lover of Rust, I came across Data Fusion. But the thing is that, like, in data science, the language of data science is Python. I think overwhelmingly is the language of data science. So what I wanted to do is I wanted to like rebuild some of my workflows and see like how different would it be to build these workflows in Data Fusion. But if I'm going to do that and I want adoption by my peers, then it must be in Python. Yeah. So I cannot just build a Rust workflow here. So I started getting into the Data Fusion Python library. And then, you know, Andrew would probably talk about, you know, how to build community. And his efforts in building community is what brought me into Data Fusion Python, because I got involved in that. I came into a problem. I put an issue up for something that was existed on the Rust side, didn't exist on the Python side, and within 24 hours was fixed. And that was a very pleasant experience. It was a very pleasant thing. And so then I, next time I ran into something that I had an issue with, I just dug in myself and put up a pull request. And then the experience with that was really pleasant. So then I did another. One thing led to another. Now I'm a active member and really the primary maintainer on the Python bindings. So for me, like my focus is really about doing data science and how we can use Data Fusion to do this data science, which means it needs to be supported in Python. It needs to be like a pleasant ergonomic experience for Python users if we ever want to bring them into the fold, you know, to use the library. So I think that's a little different than the original question, but that's kind of like how I ended up where I am.
But does it have the same coverage as the Rust libraries, or is it a subset, or how does that work?
That's an excellent question. I would say now, yes. It's probably the thing we want to talk about is in the latest release of Data Fusion Python, and by latest, I mean yesterday morning, release of Data Fusion Python. There's a big jump that we've made from version 53 to 54. And that is that in Data Fusion Python 54, we have heavy use of LLMs to ensure that we have coverage of everything that is exposed in the Rust side is now exposed in the Python side, with a few small intentional exceptions. Prior to that, the kind of the best way we had was a user had to request a function that was maybe existed over there and didn't get ported over or something like that. But now we're heavily leaning on agents to like search out and find those places where we had gaps in coverage between what was on the Rust side and what was exposed on the Python side.
Tell me about your use of AI in the project to write this code. Is it just pointing out the interfaces, or is it doing the coding, or is it some combination?
It's a few things. We've written a blog post about this recently. There's kind of two separate main uses, AI skills. And when I say we're using LLMs, really what we're doing is writing skills to be used by, you know, someone else's agent, right? And we're making those skills available to both users and developers. So the first thing we did was to identify, okay, we actually have two separate, very different audiences when we're writing skills. one audience, which I hope is the big audience, is users, right? So this is people that just want to pip install Data Fusion and start running queries. They just want to say, hey, agent, I need to write a query that's going to compare, these customers and, their locations and inventories and prices and, write this query for me and give me the results. And that's all they want to do, right? So they just want like a one-line install that gives them all of the information necessary that the agent just knows how to write those skills or write those queries. And it just knows, and it writes them, and no more effort is required on the, like, I mean, that's like the pie in the sky view. But generally, we want the agent to just be able to figure it out and do it right and do it in an idiomatic way. So that when the user goes and looks at it, it all makes sense, and it's easy to follow, and it follows like well-established patterns. So that's like the one set of skill is for those end users. And then we have another entirely
Interesting.
separate set of skills that it's focused on developers. These are actually the like more complicated ones, because the end user skills, it's really, let me just translate this human language into what the equivalent query is. The nice thing about that is like the agents actually know how to write SQL queries really well already. So all we need to do is teach them what's special about Data Fusion Python. How do we phrase things, and oh, there's a couple of things that are like more Pythonic, I like to call it. So let's just do the thing that looks more pleasant rather than wrapping everything in SQL statements, or wrapping everything in literal comments, and all these other things. So, but for the developers, it's actually far more complicated. So the developers, we wrote three separate skills. One of them is exactly what you were asking about a little bit ago. One of them is every time we bump our software version, major software version from the upstream Data Fusion Rust, what's new? Like, what's new and needs to be exposed? So that's a skill that we had to teach it to say, okay, these are the places we know we want to go and find new things to expose. So like for us, we know functions are an important thing. So if there's new functions that are out there, go find them. If there are new things that we can call on our session context, which is like kind of our entry point for running our queries, if there's new features on that, go find those. And on our data frame, which is like another one of our big APIs. So we have a small set of known APIs that are very important to us. So what we do is we go and search those out, and then say, do those match what's being exposed? And it's not just a one-to-one mapping. So there's a little bit of work in there to find all of the places that we have things that the work is done. Just make it available to the end users. Then we have another skill that says, okay, we have things that work. Let's make them pleasant, and it's actually called Make Pythonic. So let's go and find places where like a Rust representation of something isn't necessarily the most pleasant way for a Python user to interact with the code. So let's go find places like that and make any necessary changes so that when, we pip install, it's actually just a very easy thing to do. So go and find all of those, and let's propose changes to make it a more pleasant experience. And then the third is to close the loop, is to say, okay, we've written an end user skill, and we've updated our internal stuff. Now let's audit ourselves. Is there places in our user-facing skill that we need to update because we've updated our either because we've exposed new things and we probably need
Interesting.
to inform the user about it, or we've changed things to make them more Pythonic. So maybe we need to update the skill to say, hey, it would, now that you have this better interface, like maybe there's a more idiomatic way that you would want to work with this. So then we have this kind of a, close the loop skill, and the three kind of work together in that way. So.
So I know that you wrote a blog post about this, but if you could give advice to other projects that are kind of starting their journey down here, what would be the gotchas, the pitfalls, the things that they can really, leapfrog some of that early learning?
The approach that we used here was really, it's isomorphic to test-driven development, except that the test-driven development is along the lines of the input to my test is going to be just human natural language description of something I want done. The solution is going to be the examples that I've already written in my project. because I'm a good project developer. I've already got a whole set of like really great examples you can just go and use as your quick start guide. So now my test-driven development is I'm going to write a skill. The input is going to be this natural language of the thing I want to be done, containing no jargon, no API references, just human natural language. The output should be my example, and I'm going to do this as a test-driven development loop. And what I want to do is I don't want to let the agent figure things out. I want the skill to teach the agent for how to do things. So one of the things I'm going to do is I'm going to say, you're only allowed one chance to get this right. That's it. That's all you get. And I'm going to tell the agent, here's the input. There's the expected output. You get one shot. And whenever you make a mistake, don't try to fix it because agents are really good, right? They're gonna Claude Code is gonna go in, it's gonna munch away and try to figure out and make edits and make changes. And we don't want it to do that. We want it to get it right the first time. So every time it fails, that's signal to me as the skill developer that I need to update the skill, which kind of leads to the overarching theme is to think of the skill as software. It's software that's written in a almost natural language that gets sent to an agent. But that skill, if I think of it as software, you know, and I'm gonna, you know, git version control it. I'm gonna do all the things I do with software. And my test pattern is exactly what I was trying to say. Like, I've got input, I've got output. Now let's just write the software. And I'm gonna have the agent write the software because agents really are quite good at knowing what they need for themselves.
Have you found that publishing these skills has made first-time contributors more productive? Are you seeing an influx of new developers?
I don't think we have enough time to have signal on that. So we released yesterday our first
Yeah, I
version
guess you mentioned
that had heavy
that.
use of it. Well, you could already access these when you clone the repository, you have them immediately. So it's still early. We and our project, the Data Fusion Python project, is on the smaller side as far as like number of regular contributors to begin with. So I don't know if we have enough signal on that. But I know at my company Rerun, we use the skill, and I got immediate feedback both from my internal users and the companies that we work with. I got a lot of very immediate feedback about positive feedback about the at least the user facing skill.
What else is in this new release? What's coming next? What's on the horizon?
A lot of what's coming is so Data Fusion Python. We try to be on the just a kind of a wrapper on top of Data Fusion Rust. There are some things that we have added in, but most of the core development should be in Data Fusion Rust. And then as the Python project, our job is to expose it and make it usable. So that but there are, you know, sometimes a few things that we do on top of there that are specific to Python. But the thing that I am most excited about in Data Fusion 54 is we can apply functions to array lists. And that may sound very, very specific, but it's really about I can use Lambda functions and Lambda variables in my SQL queries or my DataFrame API. Being able to add Lambda functions for me, it makes a huge difference because I store a lot of data where, you know, one entry is actually a list of data, and I just want to apply. Let's say I've got, you know, one cell in my table has a list of floating point numbers, and I just want to round all of them. So I just want to get back out another list of rounded numbers. I can now do that. I can just say, oh, just apply this to every element. Boom, and it's done. It's something that exists in some of the other data framing libraries. It's been a gap that we've had for since I started. I'm most excited about this because I had written an early version of it. And I wasn't particularly happy with it. And then someone else just picked it up and ran with it and did a much better job. So I was very excited that someone else just picked up the idea and they really fleshed it out. They did an incredible job. And now it's available. And then on the Python side, it's got a very nice Pythonic interface when you write this. So that one is a big one. As far as like the things that are coming down the pipeline, there's a big push from a couple of companies to move towards distributed compute for this. We have like active work. Like this morning, I was working on it, on finding ways to hook up Data Fusion or Data Fusion Python to libraries like Spark is a big one. So that's actually going to be its work with a new library called Data Fusion Java that is just a month or two old, where we're going to try and build Spark connectors. So now Data Fusion table providers, data sources can be used as a Spark data source will be the goal for that. So that's coming. And then there's this project called Data Fusion Comet, which is a Spark accelerator. And the kind of longer term goal is that once if you're running the Spark accelerator and you're running our data sources, they can just identify that and kind of bypass the middle person and just have a straight connection of table source to running functions, and then it's all running data fusion kind of under the hood as far as it can. And then there's two other projects are called Ballista and Data Fusion Distributed, and they're two very different approaches. Ballista is a resilient Spark-like distributed query engine, and then Data Fusion Distributed is more like a YOLO, let's run as fast as we can. If the query fails, just restart the whole thing. At a super, super high level, one is like be very resilient, and the other one is run fast. So, two different approaches depending on exactly what you need to do. Because sometimes you can just rerun the whole thing, and just you want to be as fast as possible. And the work that is ongoing now, actually had a meeting just before this with someone about it, is like how can we expose these things in Data Fusion Python? Like how can we get them all working together? So we have at least three, and then kind of two other smaller projects actively in development right now, trying to get us into distributed queries for and to just work with Data Fusion Python out of the box, just a few line installs. One of the things that I'm really excited about those is that you can write a query, and I know in my work, a frequent approach has been like I'll take a smaller set of data that's kind of representative, and I'll write all my queries, and I'll test on that rapid test and development, often locally. And then once I have everything working the way I want it to, now I want to run it at scale. If using these libraries, we expect that one of the goals is going to be that it ends up being like a single line code switch from single node operation to distributed operation. I say single line, but there's going to be a few like setup lines, but as far as like actually switching the engine over from one to the other ends up being like a one line switch type thing. And for me, that's like a very nice feature to have, because like writing data frame queries in like pandas or polars or something, which are great at a single node. And then you have things like Spark, which are great at distributed, but writing them for one or the other is very different, right? And so this would be I hope, a very pleasant experience to just switch back and forth. So very excited about that.
Is Data Fusion Java also using this agentic approach, or do I need to talk to somebody else about that?
We're all the same people. The community is a decent size, but a lot of us are overlapping. Like I'm writing one, like I have a pull request open for Data Fusion Java for this Spark connector type thing. And Andy Grove, who's the original creator of Data Fusion, he's like one of the most active contributors to Data Fusion Java. I think they said that they based their early skills off of the ones that I wrote for Data Fusion Python. So there's definitely adoption is growing and spreading across our community, at least, to taking this approach.
Well, thanks, Tim. Thank you so much for your time, and thank you for the work that you're doing on this project.
Well, thank you. I appreciate the opportunity.